Anyway, okay. Now I'm going to leave that in.
Rip-roaring start.
I'm going to leave that in. So we're in Botswana again.
Yeah, back in the Delta.
It's so nice to be here. Welcome to the podcast. It's Safari Stories. Hopefully the beginning of a new and beautiful season.
I know, we haven't really decided what the order of episodes is going to be, but maybe this is episode one.
No, there will be, hopefully, also just to preface the whole season now, because it's going to be Africa Safari Stories, there will hopefully also be an Antarctica Safari Stories season, because I've managed to land myself a job in Antarctica where I guided there for a few months and it was wonderful, and it's a completely separate topic, and I would love for there to be a season on that, so hopefully stay tuned for that. But anyway, we are in Botswana. What are we doing? We're on a trip with some guests, a lovely family, and we've had some of the most mind-blowing game viewing that I think I've ever had anywhere in the last 5 days. It's our fifth night.
Yeah, for context, we're here for 9 nights in Botswana's Okavango Delta. We're recording this outside, so there's going to be some bird calls going on in the back. But yeah, we're on a 9-night safari. We're doing 3 nights at 3 different camps in the Delta, and we just had 3 amazing nights at Tubu Tree, which is more of a bush camp, and we had...
Oh, it's very much, very much a bush camp.
Arguably the most ridiculous 3 days of safari we've ever had. Yeah, we love Tubu Tree a lot. There's a lot of things that are very special about it. Why do you love it so much?
Why do I love it so much? Well, we've talked about Botswana on the podcast previously, and it's a country where they limit the amount of visitors that are able to go into certain areas. There's very large concessions or properties where the safari operators are able to operate on. Where Tubu Tree is, it's called the Jau Reserve, or the Jau Concession. It's sort of in the western, northwestern part of the Okavango.
Yeah, it's massive. I think it's like 110,000 acres.
Yeah, enormous. And there's just 3 lodges that are operating there. They're all wilderness lodges, and Tubu Tree is in the western part of that concession, so it's kind of in its completely own part of the concession on an island called Hunda Island. We've talked about Tubu Tree actually on a previous podcast. We had a fabulous time the last time we were there. Why I love it so much: it's a bush camp. It's the tents are on these quite high-raised stilts. There's boardwalks going around. It's thick kind of vegetation, lush trees. I think the last time we talked about Tubu Tree was we talked about an audio experience.
Exactly.
You're very immersed into the bush. It's not a pretentious camp in any way. It doesn't kind of try to be something that it's not. It's basic luxury. It's kind of elemental luxury in that you're very comfortable. You're looked after by a phenomenal staff that work there, that are very proud of working there, and that have worked there for, in a lot of their cases, a long time. And then on top of that, you are smack bang in the middle of the best bush and safari that you can be.
I think that that's really what, when we got to the camp, what we found ourselves enjoying so much is that we kind of got into the room and you can hear all these birds calling and you hear the wind going through the leaves and you're just kind of like, oh,
yeah,
we're back.
It's relaxing.
It's so, and you're looking out over this enormous floodplain, and we were talking a little bit yesterday actually about how, you know, like as human beings, I feel like there's just this sense of calm and serenity that you get of being able to see far into the horizon. Just
definitely,
like from a primal level of like knowing you're safe, you know, you can't see any threats to you, or if you could, you could see it from a long ways off. And at Tubu Tree, you look out over this enormous floodplain and it just is, it's incredibly calming. And
it is
watching the zebra walk across the plains and the wildebeest and baboons and, you know, all these animals throughout the day is such an amazing experience. So really enjoyed being back there, and we went out on our first afternoon drive,
I think
it began.
Yeah, I think we need to kind of put, there's a few different like sightings and stories that I think we should talk about. And the first is the story of a female leopard leopardess, if you will.
Oh yeah, should we go back to the beginning
and,
of her?
And
her
I think
story?
We need to preface all of this by saying that we last time we were at Tubutri, we had a guide called Steve, who I've remained in touch with, and this time around we had a guide called Kambango Delta, who's actually Steve's cousin. They're from the same village in the northern part of the Okavango Delta. Both these guys have grown up in the bush. This time we had Kambango Delta, and I'm completely blown away by the man's
phenomenal
skills
guy
in the bush, his ability to interpret the bush, read the bush, his tracking ability, just completely out like mind blowing. Delta has been working at Tubutri since 2009, and I would love to one day get him on the podcast because I think he's got more stories
next
to tell
time
than I would be able to in a lifetime just from his time at Tubutri. He has had since he got to Tubutri, there has been a female leopard that lives around, and her territory is around the island that has Tubutri, the camp itself, on it. And this leopard is very comfortable with the vehicles.
They call her the camp female.
She's the female, the camp female, exactly. And she has had many litters. She's, I think, about 16 years old now, so she's nearing the end of her life. But she currently has a cub that we also saw on this trip. She, in 2021, she gave birth in the toilet, the kind of main area bathroom.
Well, she
at Tubutri,
she put her very
or she
young
put her
cub
cubs
there,
there
very soon after. Yeah,
yeah, she put her young cubs there, and the manager going to the bathroom there, he discovered these cubs.
Yeah, I think it was the if I'm not mistaken, I think it was the bathroom at Little Tubu. So Tubutri is is two camps: Tubutri main camp, and then Little Tubu is like the sister camp, and Little Tubu is sometimes less busy than Tubutri.
Yeah.
Camp. And so he said that the camp female, because she's in and around the area so frequently, she knows when there are guests in Little Tubu and when there aren't. And she knew that there were no guests there and that it was nice and quiet. And so she was repositioning or relocating her cub, and she went and put her in the main area guest bathroom. And I think that the camp manager was then doing checks or something and went into the bathroom and saw this tiny little cub. And Delta was actually out on game drive at the time looking for the camp female and this little cub. And the manager at camp radioed him and said, I think that the cub is in the bathroom. And he was saying with this guest, like, you know, these guys, they don't know what a leopard cub looks like. There's no way she's in the, you know, in the main area. But they went back to camp just to make sure. And sure enough, this little leopard cub is in the corner of the bathroom. Yeah.
Crazy. So this little leopard cub, I think we're talking about two different litters.
No, so this little leopard cub, then...
Oh, this was in 2018, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I said 2021. This is in 2018.
So this little leopard cub then grows up. She's a female. She gets her own territory near the lodge. And we then went on our first game drive and...
Yeah, so it's very normal for female leopards when they kind of leave their mothers or are kind of kicked out of their mother's territory to still from time to time interact with their mothers and also to still have a territory that's reasonably close to where they were born. So a territory not too far from where they were born. In this case, the female that we're talking about, she set up a territory close enough to the camp, close enough to her mother's territory. And on our first afternoon, we went out and we found her. And she, Delta, knew where she was because he'd seen her earlier that day, and she'd made an impala kill. And that impala kill was in some thick bush. The sun was kind of setting. It was our first afternoon in Botswana. And we went there. We had a really nice view of her out in the open. And then she went and sat on a termite mound, and it was lovely. And we expected to go back there the following morning and see her there because, you know, she'd made an impala kill. Mm. Delta had also pointed out to us that she's pregnant.
Yeah, so I was going to say, what was interesting is we get there and I'm taking a bunch of photos of her and she's looking at me head on. And I'm looking at the photos on my camera and I was like, man, like, this leopard is chunky.
Yeah.
Like, she's she's thick and that's not
not like full
normal.
Not like full chunky.
Yeah,
like.
It's not like male leopards, you know, have a big thick neck and muscular shoulders, and if they're looking at you head on, it's, you know, kind of a straight line back. But a female leopard is normally quite slender, especially around the face and neck. And I just noticed that she looked, you know, a little bit thicker, her whole kind of trunk of her body. And Delta was saying, interestingly, that you can only really tell that a leopard is pregnant when she has, like, between 2 and 3 weeks left of her pregnancy.
If I'm not mistaken, so I know that cheetah have this, but if I'm not mistaken, leopards also have this. It's called a hammock muscle, and it kind of contains
the womb?
The visual, like, the fact that it looks like the leopards are pregnant because it makes the animal, or the cheetahs, because it makes the animal look more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the exact reason that they have the hammock muscle, but they do have
them. I mean, it would make sense. Even, you know, only showing pregnancy 2 to 3 weeks out, like, it makes sense that they, you know, you wouldn't want to be so physically uncomfortable and needing to hunt.
Right.
Pregnant.
Right. Just physically, it's more cumbersome. So the following morning, so we had that one lovely afternoon with that leopard. The following morning, we went out to look for her, and she wasn't in the place where the kill was. And at first, you know, to us, to Delta, that seemed fine. Like, maybe we would have expected to find her there, but fine, you know, she could have
maybe
gone off
getting water
for a drink. That's very common for predators, is to grab a drink of water after they've fed. But he told us then later on in the drive that she'd been found somewhere else, like at least a kilometer from where the kill was, and there was water much closer than that. So that to him seemed strange. And
first little red flag.
Yeah. So we went to where this leopard had been found, and she was in a tree. So she was in a jackalberry tree, just kind of looking down at us peacefully, having a snooze. And we also found her in that exact same area, not in the tree, later on in that same afternoon, so on day two in the afternoon.
Right, so in the morning we found her in the tree, and then in the afternoon when we met with Delta for some tea, he said, you know, the guides mentioned, when we left her, she was still in the tree, but they mentioned that she was only up there for like 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then she got down, she seemed uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And when we went out and found her that afternoon, she was on the ground, but in that same area. And when we approached her, she was on her back with all four paws in the air.
Yeah.
And clearly, like, uncomfortable. Even the afternoon previously when we'd seen her on the ground, she was shifting her weight. So she'd be lying on kind of one side of her belly, and then, you know, maybe 6-7 minutes later, she would flip and switch. So it was clear that she was
definitely
uncomfortable.
We're jumping timelines a bit, but just overall, the general gist we want you to get from that is that she seemed uncomfortable on her front, and it's obviously because she's pregnant, and it's just not a very comfortable position to be in, lying on your belly. So then let's fast forward a bit, because we didn't see this leopard for a couple of days, and
another day,
and on the last morning, so yesterday morning, when we left, we went and we looked for her again, and another guide had seen her, and we went to that area where this guide had seen her, and it was actually the exact same jackalberry tree that we had seen her in 2 days prior to that. And we had been told that the other guide with the other vehicle had seen this leopard disappear into a large cavity in this jackalberry tree. Funnily enough, a cavity that had been used by ground hornbills previously to nest in. So it must have been large, because, you know, the ground hornbills would have raised a chicken there, and ground hornbills are large birds. A ground hornbill is, within a very short period of time, as big as a leopard cub.
Mm.
So, you know, it would fit a leopard cub. And so we waited around, because we wanted to see if this leopard was still around, and if she was going to resurface. And unfortunately we didn't see that, but we are pretty sure that she went in there to give birth.
Yeah, well, so it was so interesting on day two, the day that we didn't see her at all. Delta said when she didn't go back to that kill the next day, he was like, no, this is weird.
Mm-hmm.
She's not gone back to that kill, and there's still plenty of meat on it. I think she's gone to give birth.
And the kill was in a really favorable location. Like, it was in really thick brush hidden underneath. There's no one that's going to see that. It's not going to get baked in the sun, so it's not going to smell bad. It's not going to
attract vultures and hyenas.
It's not going to attract vultures, hyenas. It was in a very, very good location, and I don't think she abandoned it because she had it taken by other predators.
Yeah, so then it was really cool to the next day have, you know, heard that the other guide saw her going into this cavity, and Delta was like, she's, he was very, very confident that, like, the combination of factors of seeing her so pregnant, seeing her discomfort, seeing her leave this, this kill with meat on it and going a distance away, because, you know, she wanted to make sure that there was distance between this kill and where she would be putting a cub.
Yeah.
It was just all so interesting kind of hearing his interpretation of her behavior and the kind of course of events that unfolded over our, you know, 3.5 days there.
So this story is a little bit unresolved because we had to leave camp and we don't know if she did give birth, but we assume she did. Delta said he's going to send me photos. So let's hope that when he knows what's going on there, that we get some updates and some photos. What is cool, and this is a slightly different story, is that we did see the camp female as well. And we did not see the camp female the first time we came to Tributary a year and a half ago. But we found her this time with another cub. So with her previous cub, which is around 9 months old. And we had some really cool interactions with her, and or we had some really cool sightings of her interacting with her cub, playing really close to the airstrip, funnily enough.
Oh, it was so sweet.
Yeah,
just
it was
chasing
really
each
sweet.
Other
and
around.
You know, while she is coming to the end of her life, it's kind of nice to know that her daughter is now also on her third litter, and that the story is kind of coming full circle. The chances are possible that the female that we're talking about, the pregnant female, that she is going to move back into the camp female's territory when that camp female passes away. That camp female might live till she's 20 years old, but, you know, she's at 16, she's quite old, and you wouldn't expect for her to live too much longer. But a nice story all together. I just want to talk a little bit more about Delta's tracking skills throughout us finding these leopards, because they're just, like, second to none, really.
No, it was such a fascinating part of the experience. Like, the game, and we talked about this actually a little bit on the last episode we did about Tributary, was our experience there with our guide then, Steve, of how the tracking and looking for the leopards was such a part of the experience. Even,
yeah.
You know, even when we didn't find them.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, obviously, you know, a little bit more fun when you find them.
Yeah.
But still, this time around, watching Delta track and explaining us his thought process to us was so interesting.
Yeah. Our guests asked him a question yesterday morning after we had been looking at that tree and hoping that the female comes out of that cavity in the tree, and they asked, like, how did you become a guide, and, you know, was it difficult, and, you know, we're asking him a little bit more about where exactly he's from and how he grew up, and one of the things he said that really struck me was that he grew up herding cows. It's very normal for a lot of boys in Botswana to look after their family's cows, and he would track his cows through the bush, and he could tell his own cows, whatever they were, 3 or 4 different cows, he could tell their tracks from the other farmers' cows.
Mm.
So now, not only does he understand the difference between, you know, different tracks, he understands individual cow tracks, and cow tracks are not, they don't have that much that should distinguish
that one
much from
personality.
The other. Like cat tracks, that's a little bit easier. But with cow tracks, I mean, remarkable. So he said he's always known how to track while he where am I going with this?
The plane is distracting.
No, but while we were driving one night, driving back to camp, you know, he's driving the car. We're in Botswana, so obviously it's a stick shift. So he's driving the car, shifting gears. He's got his spotlight, and very regularly would he stop and just, like, look down and say, "Oh, a leopard crossed the road here. It's going in that
2
way."
2 minutes ago,
and
10 minutes ago, 15, like.
Yeah, he's like, he builds up a mental map of where animals are, and I've never seen or come across a guide that, without the use of without having a tracker, a separate tracker on the vehicle, is able to not only find animals, spot animals, like spotting that is absurd, but find animals and then be able to create a guest experience around that.
Yeah, and also an anticipating behavior.
Yeah,
such a part of it. You know, there's such an array of guides, but for him to say, you know, based on this and this, this is kind of what I think is going to happen, what I think they're going to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't always happen. A lot of the times it doesn't, and you might make, you know, your best estimated guess of what an animal's going to do, but, you know, it doesn't happen. Time and time and time again, he would say, you know, these vultures, they're flying that way at this pace.
Yeah, this is where they're going.
This is what I think is happening. It's, and we follow the vultures, there it is.
It's just very detailed, and like his knowledge.
Exceptionally in tune.
Very detailed, almost always right. And I'm just in awe, really.
Yeah, it was
just
an
awe.
Incredible experience.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the other stuff we saw.
I know, I'm like, the dogs.
We'll leave the dogs.
Do we even go
no,
into
No, we're not
going
to go into the dogs. We'll talk about the dogs at Chitabi.
Just to give a very short example, we were thinking, he knew that there were dogs that had a den in the area. We went around the area that the den was in at the very beginning of game drive. He said, no, you know what, I don't think that they've come out yet. I don't think we missed them. I don't think they've gone out hunting yet. We see some other stuff in the afternoon. He was like, you know, I think we should go back. I think this is the right time to go back. And we're just going to circle the area. Like, if we don't see them, we don't see them. But I think they're going to go hunt now.
Yeah.
We go back into the area. He's looking. Dogs.
There they are.
Coming out of the island, getting ready to hunt. And we follow them going off on their hunt for the next, you know, 35 minutes.
Yeah. And again, that's the beauty of a place like Tubutri is you have such a small amount of vehicles in such a large area with so many different animals that when you get to a sighting, you can spend pretty much as long as you want in that sighting. And that was what punctuated for me these 3 days at Tubutri, was that the sightings we had were great. Yes, they were animals that you don't see in this setting unless you come to Botswana. These lovely palm islands with open floodplains. Yeah, you need Botswana for that. But it's the fact that we were able to spend so much time in each individual sighting. I mean, some of these sightings that we're talking about now were 1, 2, 3 hours long.
Yeah.
When you go to other areas, you get pushed out of the sighting because another vehicle is on rotation, on standby, to come into that sighting. I'm talking about places like the Sabi Sands and the Timbavati, places in South Africa that I absolutely love.
Yeah, East Africa as well.
East Africa as well, you know, you might have 20 vehicles and you feel like you're putting pressure on the animals.
Or even in a concession and you have to rotate because there's a 3-vehicle limit.
Yeah, so it's this quality time with these animals in this beautiful setting without feeling like you're putting pressure on them. That's what's been so special. But we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other sightings we've had at Tubutri in the next episode, because this is only one kind of little story that unfolded while we were there. We had many other good sightings.
A lot else happened.
And we hope we can at some point put some photos and videos up of this as well, so that you guys are able to sort of visualize a little bit about what we've been talking about. So join us again when we chat about the rest of Tubutri.